Yeah, so I felt to share for in this session. I know it's the graveyard session, but Jesus is the resurrection and the life. So if anybody falls out the window, we'll send Gert down to pray for them. But yeah, I want to speak about an ingredient that is kind of not always associated with leadership, but it's certainly come across quite a bit already yesterday and today. And so a bit like Gert, there'll be some things that will be reinforced in terms of what's been shared, which I'll just cover very briefly. It's more of a, hopefully more of an inspirational message than in terms of just wanting to just exhort us with this thing. I read a tweet, I'm a Twitter, I'm kind of a twit face, well I'm not on Facebook but I'm on Twitter, and I read a tweet beginning of January by a guy called Bruce Fordyce. I don't know quite how it came on my Twitter account, but it went on somebody who I know and ended up in the... And Bruce Fordyce, for those of you who don't know him, is quite a... bit of a legend in South Africa. He's an ultra marathon runner. They have an event in South Africa called the Comrades, which is an annual event. It's a 90-kilometer ultra marathon. It's basically the length, 56 miles run. And one year they go up from Pietermaritzburg to Durban, down. Pietermaritzburg to Durban, and the other next year the other way around. And this guy has won this ultra marathon a record nine times. He's now 62, and I don't know if he's still running in the Comrades. I imagine he probably is. But this was his tweet: "This morning, I officially ran my 200,000th kilometer on my early morning run." So he's not talking about when he's run the Comrades. Just the routine early morning runs. "The journey began in June 1976. What wonderful adventures I have experienced and friends I have made on this continuing odyssey." I just thought, what a beautiful statement that is. But you know, I don't know what strikes you when you think about that. But he had hundreds of responses to that on Twitter, and I read one or two of them. And one of the guys said, "That's equivalent to 13 to 15 kilometers per day for those 42 years with a day of rest once a week." That's pretty pretty amazing, isn't it?
150 minutes a week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Out of breath.
And another response was, "Well done, Bruce. Only 375 kilometers more needed for you to have circumnavigated the world five times." So, it's quite mind-blowing, really. And then another guy said, "Well done, Bruce. We all look up to you. I have a long story to tell about you, my experience when I was a kid." And, you know, I don't know what comes to your mind there, but this guy has left some kind of a legacy. I don't know if he's a Christian, but he's certainly been a role model to many in different areas. And what would be the word that would describe that kind of achievement? Yeah,
dedicated,
stamina. Commitment, stamina, yeah,
endurance.
Consistency,
endurance,
yeah, and steadfast,
sacrifice.
There we go, and the. You know, when it comes to our life as believers, yeah, we all know this thing that it's not a 100-meter sprint. When I think about the Olympics, when it comes to the Christian life, the thing, it's like a combination of two events that describes something of our journey. It's the 3,000 meters steeplechase, many hurdles along the way, but you know, accompanied with the marathon length of race, and. So I want to talk about perseverance today. This ingredient that's which is vital for us converting promises into possession, turning what God speaks to us in terms of rhema and making it a reality. It's the thing that actually Jesus had and took him to the cross and beyond, and where he ultimately said, "It is finished." It's what Paul said when he said, I've run the race, I've fought the good fight, I've finished the course, yeah? And I've kept the faith. Endurance, it's an essential Christ-like quality that we need to be growing in and setting the pace in as leaders. Perseverance starts where motivation often comes to an end. Yeah, it's kind of the thing of we keep on keeping on, we keep going. But perseverance requires self-motivation, self-encouragement. It's something that has to be personally cultivated and lived out. And I love the story of David in 1 Samuel 30 where he comes back with his mighty men and he comes back to a camp that's been obliterated really by the enemy. All the people have been taken out of the camp. All the wives have gone. The camp's been plundered. And David's mighty men on this occasion are not too pleased with David because they kind of think, you know, everywhere he goes, the favor of God goes, you know, the anointing's on him, he's our chosen one, et cetera, et cetera. And they're about to stone him, you know, and kind of, like, they're so grieved with what's happening here. And it says that David strengthened himself, encouraged himself again in the Lord his God. And I think in terms of what Gert and Charles have been encouraging us today with, that ability to, in the heat of battle, in a crisis, is to find that space and that place again where we replenish our reserves, where we strengthen our core. You know, if you speak to athletes or cyclists or gymnasts, in the field of, you know, the sort of athletics, they say that the most important part of your being or body physically is your core, because if you keep your core strong, you can push off from there. It keeps your stamina strong, your ability to go further, to climb higher, to endure. And David replenishes himself in the Lord, finds courage again, and goes out, the men follow, and they recover all that was lost. Somebody once says, tough times don't last, but tough people do. But that the ability to replenish. And when Jesus looks at churches, the way he defines success is often very different from the way we define success. You know, look at Revelation 2 and 3 and that quality audit that he does in those seven churches in Asia. And, you know, we tend to think often of, you know, number of people, number of home groups, number of churches planted, number of this, number of that, or, you know, we go through the numbers game. Or maybe we look at other things, other frames of reference. But his lens is quite different to us. And if you have a look at the qualities that he commends those churches for, five out of the seven churches, he commends them for their perseverance and their patience, for their endurance. And he specifically encouraged them to hold fast to what they have, to hold fast to his name, to hold fast to the works that they are doing in his name, and to contend for what they've already, the ground they've already taken, to hold on to it. And it's interesting in Paul, when he's talking about apostolic ministry, 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 12, he says, and yeah, I did all of these signs and wonders of an apostle amongst you with perseverance. And so this is a vital quality. A persevering church is in Jesus' eyes is a church that's going, is a powerful church. A steadfast church is one that's successful. Peter Daniels, who is an Australian businessman, said 90% of success is endurance. It's not the glamour thing we look at, is it? But it actually is so important for us in terms of advancing the kingdom. And actually, it reflects the one that we worship. It reflects the one that we serve, who is faithful, whose love endures forever, whose joy endures forever, whose peace endures forever. For the one who's same yesterday, today and forever. The consistency, and I love that text in Hebrews, in the Message Bible, is that where he talks about take a good look at your leaders and the outworking of their conduct and faith, because Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever, and there should be a consistency that runs through us all. You know, it's like, you know, we often, when we think of the word ruler, we think of, you know, the king with the crown. But actually, to rule well as elders in the local church, we need to be like the straight line ruler, you know, the measuring line, the level, the spirit level, you know, in terms of building something that's going to be straight, plumb line, true. And that means that there needs to be a consistency, as Gert described, you know, what we are in private, what we are behind the pulpit, what we are in the public arena. So I want to just talk for a short while just on this thing of perseverance. The actual Hebrew word means simply to stand, to abide, to stand firm, to stand by. Stand by me. Yeah. To stand fast, to stand still sometimes. Yeah, and we as blokes struggle with that, don't we? You know, we've all got to be doing something, you know, but to stand still and to still stand. To stand up and to stand with. That's the Hebrew word. The Greek word is the word hupomeno. And for those of you who might be familiar with that word, meno, it means dwelling or to abide. So Jesus talks about abiding in me. Hupo means under. So it simply means to stay under, to undergo, we might be, to remain, yeah? And so when do we fail this test, and I've failed it many times, of patience and perseverance? It's when we say, we can't stand it any longer. I'm out of here. And yeah, Gert and Charles gave some living challenge, some of the realities of the challenges that we face in life, in the workplace, as believers, and also as leaders, in terms of, yeah, being able to stand in the place, holding our position. Paul says to Timothy, you know, hold your position. Where you are. You know, that's a key thing for a soldier in battle. The enemy's coming, you know, all the fires rain. If you're gonna actually overcome the enemy, it's not about retreat, it's holding our position. I remember, just in terms of this thing of going through things and standing, in 1985 I was walking out. I used to work as an engineer in a refinery, in a place called Springs near Johannesburg, and I would have been, how old would I have been then? 24. And kind of been there a few years, and I kind of just sensed, you know, it was an environment that I enjoyed, but also there was quite a bit of enduring. You know, the chemical atmosphere was pretty hectic. There was lots of chlorine and all sorts of other nasties in the environment. And I was looking out of this as I walked out of the refinery one day, and I was saying to God, you know, I had a sense of something more in terms of call, and I said, Lord, you know, kind of in my heart, just Lord, how long, you know, fumes coming out of this stack and stuff coming out of that, how long, you know, and as clear as I've ever heard God, he said to me, as long as it takes. Is there anybody else up there? You know, you kind of. And just that thing of, you know, actually, there's some things that you have to undergo. There's some character shaping that has to be put in place. There's certain bits of toothpaste that have got to be removed, and other things that have got to come in, so that actually when you're under pressure and you're squeezed, the right thing comes out. So quickly, just want to give you six reasons why perseverance is often lacking for us. Number one, we live in a culture of the quicker, the easier, and the instant. You know, the instant coffee, instant whip, instant remedies, instant communication, instant cash, instant cash loans, which don't get repaid instantly. They take them. Yeah, that's the culture that we're kind of living in. And what that breeds is a kind of throwaway culture. Oh, you know, that one doesn't work. We just throw it away. We get something new. And we can easily buy into that in the church. Where this kind of advertising culture where, you know, we're shown things. This will change your life. This will change your marriage. This will change your workplace. This will change whatever. And we can easily get deceived and sucked into our quick fix culture and get, oh, we'll just throw away that and get a new one. Secondly, the superficiality of our society, where things are often through the TV are morally a mile wide, but only an inch deep. And relationships are kind of just skin deep. And the values of the TV or the virtual world kind of can seep into our realm, into our inner world sometimes, into our relationships without even realizing it. And, you know, 2 Timothy 3 says that in the last days that the culture that we're going to live in is people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, lovers of pleasure. And, so just that superficiality. Third thing why perseverance can be lacking in our lives is just the ease of our lives. I think that's one thing that we noticed, again, coming back to the UK, where everything's on tap, everything's convenient. You know, you can go to Tesco's and you kind of just see there's 20 different types of bread. You know, you come from South Africa and there was two. You know, in fact, interesting chatting with Glynis in Northwich this last weekend. They've got a lady there who's working in mission work and has been out in the mission field in Zimbabwe for many, many years. Was that lady, wasn't it, Debbie?
No, it was a different lady.
It was a different lady. Sorry, no, the one in Indonesia. Yes, another Debbie.
Yeah.
And who's been with her husband in Indonesia, and they were describing some of the incredible Bible translation work they've done, but some of the price they've had to pay to do that, you know. And she was home one time and with Glynis, just visiting, and Glynis had to go out to the supermarket, the shop, and said, "Do you want to come with?" She said, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to see the choice you have, because actually in a week's time, I'm back to, you know, the basics. And all of these things at our disposal, it's kind of things that can be very easy, and we can become very soft in our spirituality and comfortable. You know, C.T. Studd, who is the guy who left his cricketing career and went on mission to Africa in the, was it 1930s, and left his Cambridge degree and all of the opportunities that were at his disposal. He used to describe Christians in the West as milk chocolate soldiers, you know, soft on the inside. As soon as the heat of kind of challenge came into their lives, they kind of just melt away. And I think there is something of that in this culture that we can easily become accustomed to the, sort of this marshmallow, soggy suburbia, 2.3 cars, and or is it 2.3 kids on average? and our comfort, you know, the American dream, whatever that is, yeah. And we just become comfortable and soft rather than, and we lose this sense of conditioned by the culture rather than conform to our warrior king, who actually came from the comfort of heaven, you know, blazed a trail into the mess of our culture, so that actually, yeah, he took it on, he persevered in the process, and he triumphed in it and through it, and that, just that thing of that lion-hearted spirit of actually, you know, Charles has talked about this thing of training, that David thing, you train my hands for war, for the battle. Yeah, as Jackie Pullinger talks about having soft hearts but hard feet. Yeah, hearts open to God, but going into places that, yeah, we wouldn't normally go into with his power and with his grace. Fourth reason often we are weak on perseverance is the way the gospel is presented. And, you know, again, just often, sometimes in our desire to see people saved, and you see a newcomer coming in on a Sunday morning, oh, we've got a visitor, you know, and we haven't had one for 6 months, or whatever the case may be. And we can sometimes downplay the challenge of the gospel when we throw it out. And, you know, it's interesting that when you look at that parable of the sower, which is really a parable of the soils and the different responses to the power of the gospel, three out of the four don't make it, don't come through. But the one that does come through is the heart that's, God's open. They receive the gospel as it is. They understand the gospel as it's presented. And it says they bear fruit with perseverance. The other three, the enemy's involved. He seeks to snatch it out. But the other two categories, one guy, he responds with joy. But then when the heat's turned up, because of the word, it says, then he kind of falls away, because he doesn't fully understand what he has embraced, and so he cannot resist the tests and the temptations when they come. And then the other ones, of course, is the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desire for other things choke the word. And I think it's so key that actually we present the truth that this is a call to abandon your own life and enter into something that is going to cost you your life, but actually there's no greater adventure than following Christ as King. The fifth reason would be a lack of foundation, and I don't want to dwell too long on this because Charles and Gert have covered some of this, but a lack of foundation in three areas. Doctrinally, Paul said to Timothy, preach the word, be ready in season and out of season, convince, rebuke, exhort with all patience, all endurance, and careful instruction. So, we were saying to the lead couples yesterday, this thing of preaching week in, week out, just being anointed for that and putting in the time and preparation for that, because that actually ultimately is what transforms lives. It requires perseverance. It requires consistency. But why do we need to do that? Because it says, for the time will come when people will not endure sound doctrine. That's the word Paul uses there. But according to their own desires, they will heap up for themselves teachers, God Channel, not that everything on the God Channel is bad. But that's the cult. That's the age we're living in. We can actually tap into anyone that we like at any time, almost. And all of those, we must use the technology, because that, so that on the go we can be encouraged, we can have our faith built up, we can be using the time well, redeem the time. But we need to be selective in terms of what we're actually giving our ears to, and giving our attention to, as was described earlier. Because people will heap up for themselves teachers and will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. But you be watchful in all things, Timothy, he says. Endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist. Was Tim an evangelist? I don't think so, from what we read in Scripture. But Paul says, do the work of an evangelist. He said, break out of your comfort zone, Tim. We were chatting about this, Pete and I, yesterday. And Pete was saying, evangelism is not my gift. And I said, it's not my primary gift either. But I'll tell you, in the years that we've been in Edinburgh, the first few years that we were there, we kind of did more public evangelism than all the years that we were in Springs. And there's a few of the guys here today who were part of that. Reg and Val, Gareth, Andrea. And I think it stretched us all. But, and at times when you didn't see the fruit back from it, you thought, was it worth it? But actually, we did see folk get saved. And it was an amazing tool also for partnership with others in partnering churches in terms of impacting the city. But Paul says to Tim, break out of that comfort zone. Don't just settle for your kind of your primary gifting. Actually push into other areas for the sake of the gospel and the sake of the community. So doctrinally, foundationally, experientially, and I just want to mention this thing of apologetically as well. Knowing why I believe what I believe. For the people that we lead to persevere in the marketplace, we need to be helping them to give a defense of what they believe to their work colleagues. Gareth and another guy in our leadership team, Charles, have set up, Charles has actually initiated it, Gareth supporting him, and I'm kind of on the WhatsApp, haven't been to one of the meetings yet, but they've started a meetup thing in Edinburgh where they are getting together with guys. Some of them are just humanistic guys and having some interesting discussions. And others is just to encourage believers in terms of sharpening their sword apologetically. And I think it's a really important area, and I'm just flagging it up there because I know from my 5 years in Waitrose that all sorts of things come out in conversation as you build friendships with people, as trust is built, all sorts of things. And we need to know how to defend. That actually Christianity isn't some archaic, which is what most people think, you know, the irrelevant thing from the past, and the Bible has no relevance there. We need to show that actually it is living, dynamic, but it's a reasonable faith. And so I'm just throwing that out there. And then lastly, in terms of why do we struggle with perseverance, kind of a diet of the sensational, what I would call in our Christian bookshop, spiritual westerns, where people kind of go after the latest fad, you know, six ways to overcome this, 7 ways to be successful in that. We need to be maybe reviewing kind of our reading menu as leaders in terms of actually, as well as what we're reading in Scripture, to ensure that we're rooting ourselves in good stuff. So what causes us to persevere? Just want to give a few encouragements in terms of what causes us to run this race with strength. Number one, vision. And not surprisingly, that's the first one. I think it was Ian McKellar used to say, when you feel like perishing, it's your vision that keeps you going. You know, Proverbs 29:18, without vision, we perish, we cast off restraint, we run wild. But vision is so powerful in keeping us focused, and the revelation that God gives to us. Hebrews 11 talks about following those who've gone before and those who've run this race of faith. And, you know, it's wonderful too to have folk who come actually into your own home who are current heroes of faith, who got this vision of Christ, who are actually adventuring with Jesus. And just that whole thing of being part of a community that is seeing him and seeing how hearing the God stories of what people are doing in different regions, different parts of the world, inspires the next generation as well as ourselves to look to Christ and to endure. So Paul talks about, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision. Seeing the joy set before us. You know, part of the thing of pastoring, lots of challenges, problems, but it's seeing the potential, seeing the possibilities, seeing the deposit. Yeah, that whole thing of what motivates us is a love for people and seeing what God's put in them and the call that he has on their lives. In the concentration camps in World War II, the overriding testimony of people who actually came through those experiences was that what kept them going was a vision of a world that they had a hope for and a future for, something that they could sense that a brighter tomorrow of what they would do caused them to endure and go through what they went through. Second thing is faith. And of course, we could read the whole of Hebrews 11 to describe that. Noah endured, preached for 100 years. You know, we can easily miss that in terms of the boat that was made to specification. How long that took him? You know, Abraham with his biltong body. You know, how getting close to 100, and Sarah was probably, you know, had similar challenges at 90. But it was faith in God and His Word that actually enabled them to take hold of His promises and endure. Get a hold of those things. But the basis of that, of course, is that He is faithful. Some of you know kind of our recent story in terms of our building. Yeah, we were in August. We were told that we have to move out of our building, and so that was it was a surprise, but not a shock. Because God had kind of been speaking to us about looking for about a year, and we were kind of looking at options, opportunities, and there was one particular thing that came up at that time. But as we started to reflect, we realized actually God had already spoken about this 2 months earlier. It had just taken us a little bit of time to join the dots. And we had the prophetic team hit with us from South Africa. And in a Sunday morning moment, which was quite a really significant moment, when this lady started to paint a picture of a boat with water and mountains. I mean, an amazing, amazing picture in 30 minutes of our worship time. And the word that came was, it's time to step out onto uncharted waters. And it was such a strong word. Stuart Kilmartin, who was with us from part of that team, he said, I believe God is challenging the whole church to step out on uncharted waters in this season. And I kind of took it on from there. And the whole church kind of came to the front. It was an amazing meeting. And then 2 months later, the penny dropped. This is what it means. We've got to move building. we love those moments, don't you? Uncharted waters. We're going to take the world. And then, oh, wow. We've got to move buildings. And it was quite a challenge for us, you know, because we'd had some level of engagement in the community in the last 4 or 5 years with a cafe that we run on a Friday. A community group had started on that same day. Fairly recently, just before that, and we were looking at starting a cafe up on the second day, on a Wednesday. And so now all of these things start kind of, you know, what's the way forward? You know, our fallback position became the school opposite, because we were using that for our kids' ministry. So that we might do everything back to, you know, literally back to school, the hard yards. Do we need to get a trailer again, which we sold a few years ago, and all of those dynamics. And anyway, when you in a situation like that, you get on your knees and seek God. And so we had a time of prayer and fasting at the beginning of September, and God spoke 3 words to us, or reminded us of 3 words. Expect the unexpected. And Val had a word that she felt, it's springtime. I thought, you know, we're losing a building. You know, we had a couple of people who'd left the church. You know, feels a bit more like winter. But God said it's springtime. And then Roy Douglas had a word about, he feels that God's going to do something in October, November time. And the following morning, I was on my way into church, and I decided to walk rather than drive. And I was going out the cul-de-sac, and I knelt down to tie my shoelace. And there was a father riding a bike with a son behind, and then mother behind him with a little one on the back, and they're just coming up to a main road or a busier road, and the father turns because he can't see his son behind. He turns, he looks straight at me. I'm tying my shoelace, And he says, expect the unexpected. So I said, I'm tying my shoelace. I said, good morning. And that's all he said. And basically, what he was actually saying to his son was, we're coming to a main road. Be ready, get ready for anything. But he didn't say, those are the only three words he said. And I knew immediately God had spoken. I mean, not even, I don't know, 15 hours, expect the unexpected, God has said, and now he's saying it, boom. So I went into that Sunday meeting and I said, with faith, this is the point of the story, we can go through this season, whatever God's got for us, we can endure and persevere because he's saying to us, he's got this season covered. And he's actually saying, rise up in faith, expect the unexpected. And within 2 months, I mean, Roy was within a day of being stoned as a false prophet. And I won't give you the details, but yeah, what happened was the business guys were taking over. The guy who, the landlord who'd asked for the space back where we currently meet, which is a large space, said, you know, his business is growing, etc. So anyway, at the end of the cafe one day, the site manager, who is the health and safety deluxe guy, who we've had a few issues with, you know, with the mums and tots sort of wheeling their prams down the lane there on cobbles, and you know, and forklift trucks and commercial vehicles and all the rest of it, and he's had a few grey hairs, but he said to us, oh, by the way, the building next door might be available. I said, pardon? I said, but your business is great. Yeah, but most of the guys are going to come into this unit and next door, and there's a conversation going. Would you be interested? Of course. I mean, it's totally out of the blue. We went down to St. Austell for a week or so. Chad mentioned it to Kevin and Trace. We came back on the Wednesday. We decided to stop off at the Firth of Forth, and Lynn and I, we flew in, got our car, went down to the Firth of Forth just for a bit of a walk. And for the first time in 13 years, we saw something very unexpected. We saw a seal bobbing up in the Firth of Forth. And I said to Lynn, God's sealing the deal on this, on the unexpected. Now, we didn't know anything about that. I didn't know that, but I just kind of just, yeah. Now, Lynn works in pictures. I work in words. But so there was I 2 days later the site manager bumped into him again. He said, "Have you thought anything more about next door?" I said, "Well, we've been away for a while." And he said, "Well, let's go now." He said, "Let's go and have a look around." We had a look around. Following the same day, he sent me plans, and on the plans he'd drawn all he himself had done plans with the coffee tables and the cafe, couches in the room. He said, "Oh, you might like to do it like this." And I'm thinking, God, you're amazing. I had a meeting on the 1st of December. That's why I say it was a bit fine for Roy. This all happened in November, this new thing. Yeah. That's right. And 1st of December, meet with the landlord, and he gives us a 3-year lease beginning the 1st of April on this new building. And just an amazing turnaround. But the whole point of that story is that when you need to endure, wait on God. And when God speaks, it gives you faith. And you can share that. We didn't know where that was going. We didn't know how long. That was always the challenge, isn't it, with the prophetic? You know, God speaks. And you know, I remember me saying earlier, how long, O Lord? Well, it was 11-year wait for me before I went into leading a church and, you know, kind of discovering more of that aspect of my call and leaving engineering. That's the nature of the prophetic, isn't it? But that enables you to endure. God speaking gives vision, builds faith. Okay, number three, I'm basically out of time. Number three, patience. Through faith and patience, we inherit the promises. Hebrews 6:12. Do not become sluggish. I like that word. Don't become a slug. Don't become like that little black creature. Don't be sluggish. But imitate those who imitate those. So in other words, it's not not every believer exhibits these qualities all the time. Imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. And Hebrews 3:14 in the Message Bible says, if we can only keep our grip on the sure thing that we started out with, we're in this with Christ for the long haul. And, you know, that Greek word for patience means long-spirited. Something about patience has come up. I felt to share this word to reinforce what I feel the Holy Spirit is wanting to highlight during this time. Tyron, on many occasions in the last few years, has, and I want to do the same for everybody here today, has commended God's leaders for their ability to endure and for longevity, to be consistent, to keep on keeping on. And so patience, the word means long-spirited. And when we are patient, something actually is extended in our spiritual capacity. It enlarges our capacity. We don't like it. we don't like delays. But just please remember, delays are not denials. They're just grace-growing times for us, character-building times, shaping times. Romans 5:5 was mentioned earlier. Produces character. It enlarges our capacity. Patience is the ability to count down before blasting off. I always like that definition. The ability to count down before blasting off. And, you know, what's the first characteristic of agape love? It's patient. And that love believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Let me just rattle off a few more and then we'll close. Number four, see the whole donut, not the hole in the donut. Yeah, I love that. You know, just I really do feel God's challenge as leaders, certainly doing that, this with us in Edinburgh, to see the opportunity behind the giant. To see the opportunity through or over the obstacle. You know, what do you see? Do you see a wall, like in that breakout thing last night? do you see a low wall that you can't just get through, or do you see a wall that you can leap over? See it as a hurdle or as an obstacle? Because what we see, you know, and I think for me prayer is such a key thing in that. If we live in prayer mode, we'll go from survival to thriving. You know, in that sense of just connecting with God. And also as leadership teams together, keep praying. Yeah, God, what are you saying? What are you saying? What do you see? You know, we feel like it's winter, but God says it's spring. And maybe sometimes in our zeal we think it's spring and God says it's winter. What do you see? What are you saying? We want to embrace that. We want to run with it. We want to respond. We were saying to the guys yesterday, we've got a responsibility to understand the times according to what God is saying and what he is showing to us. And then we know more effectively what to do. Number six, take love beyond feelings to obedience. I'm going to leave that as that because that's been covered earlier. Number seven, become disciplined, especially in the spiritual disciplines. Bruce Fordyce, it was his daily run. What's that for us? Yeah, it's the food of the word. It's the training with God in prayer. So those spiritual disciplines, I've been really challenged, and I am still challenged in the area of fasting. I was diagnosed with this diabetes 3 years ago, whatever it is, 3.5 years ago. And I kind of backed off fasting for quite a while. And but I've started to press into that again. I'm not doing full fasts at the moment, but we've started to. We realized also as a church, we've disengaged far too much from that particular discipline. We started to engage again. And the testimony I shared earlier is one small example of things that God has been saying to us. We've had, you know, three times of prayer and fasting the last few months. And if I look back over the journey of the church and significant times when God spoke and that have become markers in our journey, it's been through those times where we've engaged God in prayer and fasting. So that's just an encouragement. It's not a legalistic thing. It's just drawing into a more intimate place with Jesus, letting him speak, keeping that well fresh and flowing in our relationship with him. Number eight, ruling our emotions. I don't know if any of you like playing golf. yeah, of course. Yeah, my two golfing companions from York, we had a game. That was the last time I played in September. But golf, you know, somebody summed up golf as a good walk interrupted by bad arithmetic. You know, it's a great character test. You've got to really rule over your emotions, just keep focus, you know, as this little white ball just, it's like Star Wars, goes ding, ding, all over the place. But the reality is when our emotions rule over us, we don't persevere. We struggle to endure. We struggle to keep on the same path. Remember the story of Cain? God said, rule over your anger. You know, you can actually take you can take hold of this thing. He was angry with his brother. Don't allow the sin that's crouching at the door to go further. Sadly, he didn't take that advice directly from the hotline of heaven. You know, was no intermediary there. God spoke to him directly. And God speaks to us through the word. And yeah, and it's such a key thing. I mean, Cain, that was Cain out of the game because he didn't actually respond to what God said. We could talk about Moses. I always think that was one of the toughest strikes of the lot, where he struck the rock rather than speaking to it. And God said, you know, no promised land for you. That's a real tough one for me. I think Moses is still one of my favorite and greatest leaders in the Bible. So I don't understand all the dynamics of that. But what I do, I want to learn from it because keep my emotions in check. And for the health of the people that I'm leading, my wife, my children, the eldership team, the leaders, yeah, so that we can endure well together. Number nine, accept that much of life and ministry is mundane. I think that's an important thing. Paul, remember that. Accept that much of life and ministry is mundane. You know, I think the young guys, Matt as well, we kind of can have this thing of ministry you guys are wise beyond your years, and I want to commend you for that. But I want to just encourage us all that actually there's, you know, when you think of the incarnation, for me, one of the wonders of and I think I kind of go with C.S. Lewis that it is the greatest miracle of all in many ways, the incarnation, God becoming a human being. You know, you can't get your head around that. But one of the wonders of the incarnation is that God does extraordinary thing through the ordinary things of life. And I just think we mustn't miss that, because this is this kind of endurance. It's a bit like plodding, isn't it? Okay, well, let me just do my 13Ks today. You know, I'll just push through. You know? Life's like that. Every job has its mundane parts to it. Just suck it up, get on with it. Yeah, and we Waitrose wasn't on the agenda for me when I came to plant a church in Edinburgh. That was the furthest thing from my mind. You know, the Lord's called Lynn to do physio, and I'll just get the church going. wasn't quite like that, but we had faith that Lynn would find work, and we'll go with who is the wonderful people that God had put on the ground with us. Reg and Val were part of that small group and when we began, and we'll just see where it went. We realized after 2.5 years I need to get a job because Lynn needed to go part-time. And I remember going up and down those tenement blocks, you know, 8 o'clock at night and snow on the ground outside and 8 o'clock in the evening and talking to God and how long, Lord? Yeah, guess what the reply was, you know? And, you know, it's just like, you do it. And actually, I have to say, I was saying to Tony, that those 5 years were probably some of the richest times of my experience in Edinburgh in terms of rubbing shoulders with Scottish people and having the privilege of getting to know them and building bridges with them and taking the gap when it came to pray for them and share the gospel with them. But there was the mundane with it. Yeah. I'm going to finish off with, there's a couple more, but I'm just going to finish off with the final point. Become more like Jesus. Become more like Jesus and keep looking at him. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 5 says, May the Lord direct your hearts into the love of God and the perseverance of Christ. This is a Christ-like quality. Perseverance is part of Jesus' character and nature. And Hebrews 3 verse 1 says, in the Message Bible, take a good, hard look at Jesus. For the joy who was set before him, he endured. And so I want to, just encourage us. This is a marathon, not a sprint. When Bruce Fordyce, when he was asked about his success in this kind of his 9 victories, they asked, "Well, what's your strategy apart from all the training?" And he said this. He says, "When I start the run, I just aim. Firstly, he says, I aim to have a comfortable run. In other words, to run at a steady pace." And I think that something of what Gert and Charles were describing earlier is we've got to have a pace for the race. We've got to find our rhythm in a whole bunch of different areas to be able to run at a steady pace. Yeah? I want to encourage us with that. Let Jesus be your pace maker. Yeah. He's the one that will prevent, what's the term, arrhythmia of the heart. Let him be your pacemaker. Come to him on a daily basis. Let him refresh your soul. So Fordyce said, I aim to run at a steady pace. He said, the second thing I do is I aim to have a good run alongside people for a part of the race. Just get comfortable in the race. Yeah. The third thing he says, I aim to finish. I'm going to finish. He says, remember this is 96 kilometers, so this is an unfolding journey. As time goes on, he gets nearer. He says, as things are going well, steady pace, aim to finish. I aim for gold. The top 10 in the race get gold. And in the last hour or two, as that's kind of unfolding, he says, then I aim to win. And Paul said this, he said, remember that in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize. You also must run in such a way that you will win. All athletes practice strict self-control. They do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize. So run straight to the goal with purpose in every step. And I want to encourage us, whatever right now, whatever the next step is for you, run at it with purpose. Run at it with strength and looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of your faith.